and welcome to a special Easter edition of the True Ballet Podcast. I'm Jacob Birch. With me, as always, is Eric Steven.
How are you today, Jacob?
I'm doing well. I say Easter, even though you may put this up on Tuesday, but a little behind the scenes.
Yeah, we're peeling back the curtain, if you will.
We release the episode.
Yeah, we have yet to release a live podcast.
We'll do it one day.
One day. We probably will, I think, at some point.
It's easy enough to do now.
Yeah. I think the best scenario, one of these days we're going to hit the jackpot where both of our schedules work out, like, with the Dodger off day and, like, timing, so we could do it, like, on Facebook and put all of our attention to it, you know, as opposed to, like, finding time to record and then getting it up at some point in the next couple days, you know, that kind of a thing. So, but you never know.
So right before we started recording, I mentioned I wanted to get to the mailbag pretty quick because I had a lot of tweet replies, and that usually means a lot of questions. But I'm noticing now almost all of these are just people talking about blisters and solutions to blisters. And that's probably the lead news. The new news is old news.
It's weird because, like you say, we're recording this on
we just need to record the evergreen Rich Hill has a blister out for 10 days episode.
or like, have some sort of a sign like, X days since Rich Hill was with a blister, and then we're going to have to reset that pretty soon. It's like, they literally just, they just activated him off the DL today, so he missed, like, the new 10-day DL. That he missed one start with it, so because they had an off day, so it worked out, you know, whatever, like, kind of how they wanted it for that. But then, sure enough, in like the, you know, during the game again, he like felt like something crack again with his more blister problems, and he left like after three innings. And the way, like, after the game, he was, it's the way they're talking, like, he's going to go back on the DL again. Basically, like, they don't know. And then Dave Roberts was like, you know, he's probably gonna have to, like, start a minor league game before he comes back, so that he can show that he can last five innings, you know, before they sort of commit to him back. And so, and then, you know, Rich Hill's talking about, like, I wonder if they have, like, a medical miracle. That he's like, everything is just, like, weird. So they haven't announced anything yet. I suspect it'll come Monday. They'll probably go right back on the DL, which means more Alex Wood in the rotation. So there we're back kind of at square one, or maybe it's square zero with Rich Hill, because it's probably worse than they imagine.
I have a tangential question real quick.
Yeah, yeah.
Are you at a Jiffy Lube?
No. Oh, is there? Yeah. No. I have Slack open. Hold on one second.
Okay.
I know. You know what? It's because usually I have the... usually I have the headphones on.
Uh huh.
But I'm not wearing the headphones right now. Hold on one second.
Sure.
Let me see.
I was excited because you'd be at the most successful Jiffy Lube, just cranking out the oil changes.
It's like an Easter Sunday night service. ka-ching.
Lord has reminded me the 3,000 miles are up. It's time to.
What if like every time we mention a Rich Hill blister, like, we get sponsorship money or something? That's what that sounds
like. I'm okay with, you know, I'll take Jiffy Lube as a sponsor.
Yeah,
that leads to Farmer John. It's the path.
No, it's the gateway sponsorship. Like, actually, can we pause real quick? I'll grab my headphones.
Sure.
I forgot about that aspect of the of not wearing headphones.
Man, we're really peeling back the curtains. You know what? To the listeners, it looks like you just put them on instantly.
Whoa.
You're really fast. Congrats.
Yeah, well, actually, what happened was Jiffy Lube just closed, so no more oil changes for this.
Well, so going back to Rich Hill, you mentioned quickly that it probably means more Alex Wood in the rotation, and I'm okay with that.
Yeah, absolutely. He's pitched very well. His one start last week, he only went like 3 2/3 innings. He was pretty, like, effective. I think part of that was, like, you know, it was a spot start.
Just stretching out, yeah.
Yeah, so, like, I think he'll be fine. Like, the one question, and it might come up in our questions, but just getting it out of the way, Julio Urias, like, is he's made two starts so far for AAA. He's like actually closer than probably what we thought a couple weeks ago, but like probably going to be ready, going to be up by the end of the month. But like specifically, Roberts was asked if like Urias would take like Rich Hill's next start, and he said no, not going to be ready. So like that's like too soon, like you know this coming week. But I would imagine like the next week is essentially when Urias is ready. So if you're thinking ahead, like that, start thinking about that as well. But yeah, so that's kind of Dodger rotation very much in flux, as we sort of probably reasonably should have expected it to be.
There's a few other sort of general things to cover, but I do think a lot of the questions cover that. So let's dive right in.
Yeah, we got a good amount of questions this week. Thanks for sending everybody.
Blue Man asks, Kazmir, McCarthy, Hill, why does the front office go after injury-prone arms like these guys?
I mean, yeah, all of them are also, like, have varying degrees of, like, pitching pretty well. Like, Kazmir had three, like, good years before they signed him. McCarthy sort of had turned a corner a little bit after several injury-prone years, so... and you know his sort of big bugaboo is shoulder stuff, and he's dealt with, you know, Tommy John since he came over, and then the yips. So yeah, I don't know. Hill, you know, he's like a little bit of a different animal, because I think for sure with him going in, they didn't expect him to pitch like 30 starts a year. So this like all sort of part and parcel with what they're expecting. They just know that when he pitches, he's going to be really good. It's just a matter of keeping him out there and making sure he's sort of healthy for the stretch run in October and stuff. So, yeah, it's not – there's no getting around it. I don't know. But, yeah, there's not – they weren't without merit for sure.
And
I mean,
each contract was signed. Maybe you could argue that Kazmir's wasn't. But it was largely signed with sort of the injury risk in mind and – sort of a ability to get contracts at lower price and then combine them, trying to get four or five of them and then try and create that depth. Obviously, last year they were on the wrong end of almost all of those. You could argue Kenta Maeda came with the same injury concerns and he wasn't, although sort of looks like maybe he is now, and that might come up in a question, and if not, I'll ask it.
Yeah, and then like he, you know, and Kent, and I mean, and frankly, that's part of their plan. Like, mm-hmm. They're stockpiling because they can, like, you know, at their best, all these guys are pretty good. So it's just a matter of at some point trying to utilize, you know, trying to figure out or trying to get as many of these guys as possible at their best, and then just going from there. You know, it's not super efficient necessarily, you know. It's like one of the things that being like in a big market like allows you to do. I think it's, you know, I don't know. It's kind of weird. Like it's weird that they are, like, you could argue they're all like overpaid, right? Like Hill definitely, because like for more so because he's older and he only has like 610 career innings at age 37. So. Whatever, but like all of these three are $48 million contracts, 2 or 3 year deals, one's a 4 year deal. But like, and then you look at it, but it's not like they didn't give Zach Greinke $206 million. Like, you know, like that's like crippled Arizona basically. And they're, you know, it's not like giving Mike Leake $90 million, you know, or Jeff Samardzija $90 million. So it's all relative, like, you know. But then again, it's also like they missed the boat on like Johnny Cueto. They could have given him 6 years, 130 or whatever he got. That's a great deal. Like, it's looking pretty good. So even if he opts out after this year. There's both sides of it. But they, you know, it's not, they aren't like really, they haven't really stopped them from doing anything else, so I guess.
David Young asks, I'm going to combine two questions here. What is your preferred treatment for blisters? And Pura Vida wants to know, what is a blister?
So I guess technically I'm not going to Wikipedia this or anything, but it's just basically like the tearing of, you know, either you have a tearing of skin, or some sort of like a, not like a callus, but like a, you know, you get like something that's filled with like pus or something, and then you it's like
I'm imagining you with a doctor's coat on right now, by the way.
Yes, with a stethoscope, yeah. Just gonna, like looking very pensive, but yeah, it's essentially like these guys use their like pitchers, they're using their fingers to put pressure on the ball, and especially with Rich Hill, like he's like half of his pitches are curveballs. Like he more so than most others, like is susceptible to that. So he's constantly putting pressure on his fingers to do that. So any sort of disruption in that is bad. I know it sounds weird because you're it's just a blister, you know. It seems like the least like manly injury, if it, you know, but it's really like bad. Like last year, Rich Hill had like. It was like bad. Like he had like this gash, like basically in his hand or his finger. It gets pretty gnarly. Like even Yasiel Puig, Andre Ethier's dealt with it. He had like a quarter size hole in his hand. You know, they called it, it's like a blister, but it's really like this massive, like, you know, torn piece of your hand. It's like, it's not, you can't really function normally like with that. So, as much as we sort of downplay it, it's still pretty, still pretty major, but yeah, I don't know. It's but yeah, my preferred thing, the old standby, I think Nolan Ryan used to do this, was the pickle brine or pickle juice. You either like dunk your hand in it or you know, use that or as the old thing. I know people like also consider like drinking it, which is kind of gross, but I'm not sure if that specifically, how that specifically helps the blisters, but I know, like, you know, supposedly putting your hand in it is supposed to be really good. I think, so if I had to guess, like, pickle brine is probably my preferred, like, old school method of, you know, off the top of my head, for this week in baseball medical news, I guess that's the best way I can remember it.
Not a fan of peeing on it?
I mean, look, I'm a fan of peeing on anything. So, if we're being honest here, like, we saw, you know, like guys who, like Moises Alou, you know, didn't wear batting gloves, and that he was famous for like saying like he peed on his hands and gave him a better grip. And Greg Maddux was like famous for peeing on teammates in the shower. So like, I'm a fan in general of that method. But where Rich Hill's at right now, honestly, like he should consider it. So, like I'm not going to poo-poo it.
Or pee-pee it, for that matter.
Yeah, exactly.
Divian also asked, will you be resurrecting any puns for this podcast? Well, there you go. Next question. Is Pedro Baez actually working a little quicker this year?
I mean, he's only pitched twice.
It came up in the broadcast today. I don't know if you were.
Yeah, today he looked a little quicker, I guess. But like honestly, like for me, like I'm not as concerned for him, like in terms of his pace. Like he kind of is what he is. Like at this point, I think like if he's pitching like and has like a dominant year, he could go as slow as he wants. Like it doesn't really matter. Like if it pisses the other team off, whatever. Like it doesn't really matter. They're working on him. Like Dave Roberts was like joking yesterday. He's like, yeah, it's a work in progress. He's like, he's not going to be Rich Hill. Rich Hill's a quick worker. They're definitely working. I think ultimately we're going to see a pitch clock where like there's a rule already in place. They just never enforce it. Where you have to get the ball in a certain time or start your delivery. I think once they sort of get the pitch clock going, I think that'll sort of help things along in this regard for pitchers like Baez, et cetera. But, he's probably making some improvements, but he's got a long way to go. So it's not like, he's still got a long way to improve. So there's still definitely some improvements to make.
Tangent, and I brought this up last week, but I want to give kudos again to Joe, also known as Jim Davis, for I had to. I watched the Royals game today, and then the Dodgers game. I had family over for Easter, and they're all Royals fans, and it already can tell very night and day difference, at least with them, just in terms of keeping the broadcast sort of focused on baseball, less homerism, and a lot of the sort of interesting facets about the game. Pedro Baez speeding up. You mentioned the rule that was already in place. He brought that in yesterday, up in yesterday's broadcast. Just little things that I don't expect to hear necessarily from most local team announcers, and I've been hearing. I've been very happy with it.
Yeah, Joe's great. Like, he's very well versed in what's going on, and he's always like looking for new things, and he'll bring up interesting things like during the broadcast. I really like it a lot.
David Yun has yet another question. He's got all sorts. Who is the Los Angeles Dodger career leader in sacrifice flies?
Oh, I meant to look this up because I saw the question earlier. Just my initial guess is probably, I'd say Eric Karros as a guess, but like it's
Karros
probably
going to be my guess.
So it's probably someone who is with them even longer, but I'm going to look it up as we speak right now.
See who can win. I'm looking it up too.
Oh, well, if you're looking it up, I'm not going to look it up.
Well, you're better at this though. So
yeah.
Oh, there is actually. Here we go. This is annoying. There is an all-time leaders page on the Dodgers, and Sacrifice Flies is one of them. And it just keeps bringing me back to the same page.
What?
Yeah.
That's one of the new baseball reference, redesigned.
It is, in fact, Eric Karros.
So we're both
74.
Genius.
Yeah, we're really good at this. So he then asked for by position. So there's your first baseman. Willie Davis is your center fielder. Ron Say is your third baseman. Let's see. Kind of scroll down past more first baseman. Bill Russell is your shortstop. Dusty Baker. My goodness. I'm watching too much Law & Order. Is your left fielder. Let's see. Catcher is John Roseborough. That's a little surprising.
But he was a decade.
Andre Ethier is your leader in right field. What am I missing? Third base? No, Ron Say was third base. Did I get everything?
Russell. I mean, shortstop. I guess
second base.
Yeah,
Jim Gilliam. It's almost just like who is your at bat leader for each.
Wow. Yeah, but this came up because during the game yesterday, Saturday, Yasiel Puig hit a sacrifice fly, and he had one for two straight days. So I looked up random crap during the game, and I think I tweeted it. It was like I said, he was the first guy, first Dodger to get sacrifice fly in back-to-back games since like Adrian Gonzalez in 2014. And one of the Dodger PR guys from the press box, he just yelled, he's like, "Eric, that's probably the worst stat you've ever done." I just started cracking up. It was pretty funny. But then, like, the record for at least since 1913 is three straight games, and he was snapped today, so he didn't get that. But yeah, Andre Ethier was one. Eddie Murray was another, and I forgot who the other one was. But I was just kind of laughing at that. So that's probably what spurred on his Dave's question.
Keith Cook asks, knowing Urias is on a pitch count until he turns 32, when is he expected up? Mid-May? He'll hang up and listen.
Yeah, like you said, it's going to be end of April, and it's just a matter of when. So, like, we're recording this Easter. By two Sundays from now, he'll be in the majors. That's my guess.
Let's see. A lot of people giving us blister recommendations. A lot of suggestions for amputations and cutting it off because people.
That was one of the questions to Rich Hill today. He's like, "What would you consider like amputating?" He's like, "Huh," and then like, sort of also considering it. Like,
Let's see. David Ponce, I think I'm pronouncing that correctly, asks, why do the Dodgers instruct runners on first base to dance around and not take second base on John Lester? You were annoyed by this too, right?
Oh my God, it's the dumbest thing ever. So like, John Lester's thing is he doesn't throw over the first. He, like, just literally does not do it. He hates doing it. So, and the Dodgers, and the way you take advantage of this is to get a big lead and then run, you know? So what they did with Lester in that Monday game, the one guy they actually ran with was Franklin Gutierrez, who's not fast, who did not have a big lead, and it was a hit and run because he's looking back, and he hurt his hamstring on the play. So, like, and he was out, by the way. And then they had, like, Kiki Hernandez and Jock Peterson on. Jock Peterson had, like, a stance looking like a track guy, like, just literally, like, pointed towards second base, like, in a three-point, like, track stance. He had a big lead, and they don't run. And, it looks like their entire MO against Lester is to try to distract him when he's proven throughout his major league career that he's not going to be distracted on the mound. He's ignoring you as a runner. So rather than taking advantage of this and actually taking the free base he's offering you, they look like idiots, like just dicking around at first base and pretending like it matters. And then it just looks stupid. Like he's giving you the big lead, take advantage of it. Like, so it's a waste of time to do what they're doing without actually getting the advantage of it. So I just wish they'd stop. Either if you're not going to run, just don't do the other bull crap. It's stupid.
Thank you, David. Next up from Hank Ostendorf. Hope another name I may be mispronouncing. If I am, I apologize. Two questions for you guys. Has the time come to automate umpiring, or does the human element still add sufficient charm?
I've seen some pretty good arguments in favor of, like, the automated strike zone, if it's done right. But it's always difficult because, you know, you have to, like, it's still tailored to each batter, so you have to get the computerized zone, you know, calibrated for each guy. It's difficult. So I'm sort of in favor of that if it works right, but then there's still, the umpire still has a lot of work to do at home plate. There's, you know, plays at the plate. There's directing traffic and out calls and stuff like that. So, but yeah, I think I'm more in favor of it than I thought I would be of like automated strike calls. But what do you think?
I am still against it, but I don't have a good rational reason for it. So, which I think is probably the case for most people. It just doesn't feel right. No matter how many times umpires get balls and strikes wrong.
I think it has the potential to, like, fail. Like, I think you have to make sure.
What are the players going to do when they don't have a person to blame?
They're going to be like, stupid computer, or like, you know, whatever. Like, I don't know. Yeah, it's going to be weird. It's not a clearly defined, like, region, like tennis, like a tennis court where they have the, you know, the mat cam or whatever for, like, serves and out in and out calls for, you know, but it's just so it's really it's weird. But I think there's a way to do it.
I think there is, and I'm sure if they found that and they implemented it, I would not care within like 2 months. But for now, it still just doesn't feel right.
You have to get, for it to work, you have to get the umpires to buy in. So you can't make it like, hey, you're terrible at your job, we want to replace. You have to make it like, make it something that they could work with, you know, like, and it's not like, that's not feeling like it's, you know, replacing them. So I think you just, there's a way to make it work. And probably within a few years there, we're going to get some sort of, at least on a trial basis, I would imagine.
Second question from Hank is, knowing what we know about Ethier's injury, how many starts do you expect him to make this year?
So he's still, like, not in, like, baseball activity mode. So probably a few weeks away still. That said, probably going to be available at some point in May, I would imagine.
Starts, though.
Sure, just sure. Backing my way into it. You just have to factor in he's going to be dealing with stuff, and he's going to be part of a platoon, best case scenario. So, like, I would say, like, 70 is probably, like, reasonable. Might be high. I don't know. yeah, 70 sounds about right to me.
Thank you, Hank. Rusty Heyman has a question, and I like this question. Is Cody Bellinger better than Adrian Gonzalez today?
No.
Yeah.
I think, and it's one of those things, like, and for, like, even if he was, like, it doesn't really matter, like, because they're not going to, like, oh, they're not going to call him up, you know, to replace him. You know, but, yeah, I don't think he's better now. Like, he's still got some holes in his swing. Obviously, the potential's great. He could come up and do really well, like, this year. But I think for him to actually come up and replace Gonzalez, Gonzalez has to be, like, Jimmy Rollins, like, forking back done, kind of, you know, for that to happen. So, mm-hmm. Bellinger's path is still take one of the outfield spots, or at least at a part-time role, to come up this year. But yeah, or Gonzalez hitting the disabled list, like, the first time ever, and then getting some extended run there. But
do you think, and obviously we don't want this or wish this or thinking it will happen, but hypothetically, if he hit the DL for any reason, do you think it's a Bellinger call-up, or do you think they make do with, like, Van Slyke and Utley kind of?
Yeah, so if it's, like, today, probably not Bellinger, but, like, maybe within a month, and like, if Bellinger's still hitting really well, which he is, he was off to a good start, but I think they let him hit a little bit, let him still develop a little bit, and then before they pull that trigger. But yeah, so if it's like near the end of May or something like that, if that's the timing of it, then it's more likely, but maybe not right now.
Brandon Johnson asks, White and Buehler are dominating high A. How long until they move up to Tulsa and beyond?
Yeah, I mean, so for me, the only issue, like, White specifically has been great. Buehler struck out, like, 8 in a row the other day, so he's like, right there, too. You have to be wary of, like, with Buehler, he's coming off Tommy John. He only pitched, like, 5 innings last year, so he's on a bit of a limit. So they're, I don't know yet with him. With White, he's been fantastic, and he's definitely going to move up at some point. The only issue is, like, before we start pumping I think he needs to pump the brakes a little bit with him, because, like, people in our comments are already talking about him, like, how he's clearly going to be a top 10 prospect in baseball. It's like, all right, calm down, folks. Like, for me, like, to be there, you have to, like, actually be able, if you're a starting pitching prospect, you have to show that you can actually go every fifth day, like a starter's innings. Like, he's still at that level. He pitched 5 innings, like, his last outing. That's by far his longest outing as a pro. So he needs to do that, like, every fifth day for a little while before we start anointing him, you know, pretty, like Dylan Bundy did this in the minor league. He was unhittable in, like, these 2 and 3 inning stints, but then he still had to prove that he could do it, like, as a starter every fifth day. He went through some injury stuff. He's now, like, sort of coming into his own in the majors, but you just can't like, look at a guy in 2-3 inning stints and go, like, well, he's a dominant starter, clearly. I think he has to prove it, like, and go through that over time. That said, like, probably going to be, for both guys, I would imagine by the end of May they're in Double A. Maybe quicker for both, but yeah, like, that's probably the end point for them in Single A, just because they're so good. Like, so they probably want to challenge him a little bit.
Now, I know you're excited about this. Last week, we did not have any questions from Craig Minami, friend of the podcast, because we tricked him.
We
started recording,
we jumped
too
him,
early.
Yeah.
But we got questions this week. He got the memo. He made sure he knew.
Yep.
So here we are. We've got 5 questions. Who had a better early comedy movie start, Adam Sandler, Bill Murray, or Eddie Murphy?
Man, great question. And, like, I'm as big of a fan of, like, really dumb humor as the next guy. Like, I those early, the first 2 Sandler movies.
I was about
were
to say, but the problem with the Sandler movies is that the first 2 were great. The third was,
yeah.
Was the third Waterboy?
Great question.
I think I think, like,
yeah, he went downhill fast. Like,
yeah, and then he had the Punch Drunk Love, where he was great in it, but that's not an Adam Sandler movie. That is a movie starring Adam Sandler.
for purposes of this question, I'm considering just the start and those Billy Madison, Happy Gilmore as his, like.
But to me, that's not fair because fair warning. I was not alive during Bill Murray or Eddie Murphy's start.
But he's also a clear third.
Yeah.
For these guys, because like
it's just two movies. that's the biggest thing for me.
But Eddie Murphy was like the biggest star on the planet,
mm-hmm.
like immediately. You know, like he was 48 Hours. And Trading Places, and then Beverly Hills Cop, like
Coming
boom, boom,
America.
Boom. Yeah, but that's like 88. So we're like, I'm talking like 83,
but like
84.
To me, his streak just didn't stop. Whereas Adam Sandler started making bad movies pretty quickly.
Yeah, but I mean, like by Beverly Hills Cop, Eddie Murphy was like Michael Jackson famous.
Sure,
like, you know. So yeah, so he's like clearly a number one. Murray was great because he had, you know, he had some versatility there. He had like he was, you know, a Caddyshack's an ensemble movie. He had a big part in it, you know, or I mean, it's a small part for the movie, but like a very memorable part. But then also like you have
Meatballs
and Stripes, like those are great. And for the like just for those three alone. Like that puts him ahead of Sandler for me. So yeah, I think it's clearly Murphy, Murray, and then Sandler.
Looking at the Bill Murray filmography right now, yeah, that's about right. A few less remembered movies somewhere in the middle there, but that's what we'd consider first. So yeah, that's the order I would go with. But again, it's hard for me to evaluate as I was not. Of the movie-going age and or born yet during the Bill Murray or Eddie Murphy era. So
I'm trying to think, because Beverly Hills Cop was 84.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm 8, but I don't remember seeing it at 8. But I must have seen it relatively quick. Like, you know, within a few years. Maybe I did see it. But I mean, it was great. It was hilarious. So
let's put it this way. Eddie Murphy filmography has its own page, which was not the case with Bill Murray.
Boom and boom.
Yeah. 48 Hours, 82. Trading Places, 83. Beverly Hills Cop 2. The Golden Child. And then it was Coming to America. See, I wasn't that far off in terms of streaks.
Yeah.
So
Coming to America, I'm just saying. Like,
yeah. I just meant there wasn't a lot between the two. That's all.
Golden Child is a little bit better. Just terrible. But.
Okay. I am not going to, this is Craig again, I am not going to send the answers in a separate email, making me click a link. Last week, Corey Seager received the Silver Slugger Award for NL shortstops. Can you name the last time a Dodger won the award at first base, second base, third base, outfield, catcher, and pitcher?
I know for sure Gonzalez won the year he led the league in RBIs. So, like, he's the last one for first base. I think that was 2015, maybe 14.
Second base. What?
For second base, I think it's Jeff Kent.
That would be my guess. I'm looking this up now.
And if it's Jeff Kent, it's probably 05.
It was 05 for Jeff Kent.
And then what were the other positions?
The ones that aren't shortstop.
Every position. Okay. Jesus.
But only one for outfield. You don't have to, like, do that weird thing.
I have to go Kemp then for outfield.
Checking now. Yeah, it's weird. Hold on. I have to see how this is organized.
2011 is my guess for Kemp.
You are correct on that account, and I'm making sure no one won afterwards, and that is correct. So, third base?
Okay. Mm. I'm thinking.
Beltre is the easy guess, right?
He's got to be, 2004 Beltre.
Yep, and that is correct. So, catcher and pitcher.
Greinke in 2014?
13.
Yeah, 13 maybe.
Correct. And then Russell Martin had to win it 1 year, right?
I think it was Russell Martin in 2008 or
2007.
Yeah.
There it is.
Yeah.
We did pretty good.
We're pretty awesome.
He even gave us a hint that they were all in the aughts or later. We didn't need that. Yep. Yeah. We didn't need that.
Answer for suckers.
Today's snack question, we always need one. Corn nuts, plain or flavored, or I'm not eating these named things. I have a very strong opinion on this.
Your strong opinion is that you don't eat corn nuts.
I think they're the one of the most atrocious things in the world.
I love them.
I can't be in the same room as someone who's eating them. They smell awful.
I wish it was the worst. I wish I was eating some right now. So for me, and I like the plain ones probably most. I don't really eat them a ton. Like, maybe in spring training involves a lot of trips to Quick Trip or some local convenience store. So,
but you don't need the corn nuts at the Quick Trip. You can get other delicious snacks.
I'll grab some corn nuts every once in a while, and then so like there they have some different flavors.
History's greatest monster.
I don't like ranch, so I don't get those. I'll get like the chili lime or the whatever the picante one is, like the hot one or whatever. But yeah, and they have barbecue. But for me, I think the plain just.
Question 4: Which current division leader will stay in playoff contention in September? There's a couple, right? Houston Astros are currently leading the AL West.
Yeah, they're clearly a contender.
And then I think the Washington Nationals are currently tied for.
Yes, and they're clearly. Rockies are ahead in the West, so. I don't think they're quite there.
I like
their
team, though. Like,
but yeah, but
we
they're,
both
they're
were
like
kind of high on them when we talked preseason.
They're close enough to like be like, all right, they'll
and maybe if things stay weak elsewhere, you know, maybe make a run for wild card.
Sure. But yeah, I don't know. I'm not really sure the other.
Cincinnati Reds are leading the Central. The Detroit Tigers are winning the Central.
A big fat nope on the Reds. I actually like the Tigers.
Okay.
I think the Indians will win it, but the Tigers are good.
And then the Orioles are leading the AL East.
Yeah, there's no reason to think the Orioles won't like hang around. So I'm on board.
Maybe challenge the Red Sox. They did most of last year. Red Sox team obviously looks very, very good, but.
So basically, the Reds are like the only true pretenders. Rockies are close enough to contending, and the Orioles are probably also close enough to contending. Everything else is like
first two weeks of baseball.
Exactly.
Although, you know, they said that about the Royals, you know, a few years ago. So prove us wrong, kids.
Yeah.
The fifth question: who will be the next Dodger to steal home?
So Kike already did it this year once. I was on a double steal, which is basically how you're going to get it now.
I was about to say, can I disqualify double steals if I say
never.
Just who's like never, ever, ever?
Yeah.
Okay.
I don't know. I think Puig's got it.
Yeah, it has to be just blowing through whatever sign he's got. Not sign, but. Instructions he gets. He goes, nah, you know what? I'm just going to go for it.
I'd like to see a triple steal one of these times. With the bases loaded, you just send all the runners. And then go from there. So they just erected the Jackie Robinson statue, and it's depicting him like stealing home. So why not, to honor Jackie Robinson, why not just start taking home whenever you can?
Well, Eric, that's our show.
Wow. This actually flew by. We had a lot of questions, but I like it.
We're gonna maybe be back on Tuesday recording next week. We'll see.
Yeah, I think so. I don't. What an awesome ending this is to a great podcast. but no, thanks for listening, everybody. Try to if you have time. Give us a good rating on iTunes. That kind of helps out a little bit. Thanks for listening. Send questions to tblapodcast@gmail.com or send it to us on Twitter, TrueBlueLA, or Jacob Birch, J-A-C-O-B-B-U-R-C-H, Thanks for listening, and we will talk to you next week.